Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
One of our listeners, Mark J., pointed out to me a great book recently by Lars Anderson titled Carlisle vs. Army, Jim Thorpe, Dwight Eisenhower, Pop Warner, and the Forgotten Story of Football's Greatest Battle. Mark's absolutely right. It's a phenomenal book and even better story of the game, and I had little awareness of ever taking place. This is going to be the first of a two-parter, and it's coming up for you, part one, in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Recently, one of our great listeners and readers, Mark J., sent me an email and told me, he goes, Darren, he goes, you have got to check out this great book I just read, Carlisle at Army 1912, by a gentleman by the name of Lars Anderson that wrote the book. And so finally, I him-hawed around. I got the book. I started reading it, and Mark was right. Man, what a great book. I tried a couple different occasions to get the author, Lars Anderson, to come on and talk with us. Tried through his publisher. Just couldn't make the connection. Hopefully, maybe in the future we can, because what a genius book of research this really is. And, you know, it was a game, it was about a game in 1912 on the schedule that almost every football fan in America was looking forward to. The November 9th, 1912 Carlisle at Army game, which featured the star power of Jim Thorpe of Carlisle against Dwight D. Eisenhower and his Army teammates. The men of Carlisle, with their legendary head coach, Pop Warner, had a national title aspirations with a 9-0-1 record. They were coming into West Point, while the cadets, they sported a 3-1 record and were picked by many, including the father of American football himself, Walter Camp, to be the top team in the East. Now, first let's talk a little bit about the Carlisle Indian School. It was located in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It was the flagship Native American boarding school in the United States from 1879 to 1918. It was founded by the U.S. government as a means to take young Native American boys and train them in Western culture to assimilate the culture into the people that were cast in reservations across the country, and thus hoping that they could assimilate the Native Americans in with the rest of the population and get rid of the reservations. Well, it didn't work out as what they expected. But the Native boys from nearly 140 different tribes left their homes on the reservations during that span of the school's tenure. They were taken out of their own familiar culture and placed into an almost military-style boarding house and were made to wear uniforms and have their long hair cut to much shorter lengths. It had just been over 20 years since the last death that occurred in the Plain Indian Wars, and the Plenty Horses, a former student at Carlisle, fired a shot that killed a former West Point cadet, Edward Casey, in January of 1891. Though most of the players of this 1912 game were either not born yet or too young to remember, there were plenty in the stands and at home that had a rooting interest in this football contest that had relevance to the fighting between white settlers of the U.S. Army and the Native peoples of America. Now, there's a great biography in Anderson's book on the founder of the Carlisle School, Richard Henry Pratt. The bio of the author takes the reader to a touching tale on Pratt's realization of the importance of the Indian football and its connection to white fans. Early on, in a game where Carlisle was hosting the powerful Yale team. You remember them, guys that had Walter Camp as their coach, and you know, some great players like Pudge Heffelfinger, and even Amos Alonzo Stagg came out of there. Well, the Carlisle Indians appeared to gain a scoreboard advantage on Eli when they appeared to score a breakaway touchdown on a 35-yard run. The team celebrated until a referee on the game informed the crowd that he felt the runner had been stopped at the line and his momentum stopped before he broke loose to cause the whistle to be blown. The Carlisle captain and his teammates were distraught, and they felt cheated, and they were darn upset about the call, and they started to walk off the field until Pratt stopped them right at the sideline. School's founder, you know, very stern voice, very compassionate, and had empathy with them. He convinced the boys that if they stopped now, they would be remembered as quitters and not for the team that played hard against the heavily favored Yale squad that had a touchdown called back. The men returned to play the game, and although they lost, Pratt learned that he needed a coach to mold these talented young natives into a football team, because the stands, the fans in the stands, were cheering for Carlisle when they went back on the field. They knew that they had such a great team, but they were just overmatched that day, and they were cheering that they didn't walk off the field. They knew they were cheated on the call. It should have been a touchdown, according to many that were watching. But that's what gave Pratt the idea. He needed to get a coach in there that could organize this team and get them to play football the way they should. Well, thus, Glenn Pop Warner was brought on to coach. Now, Lars Anderson does a genius job of storytelling through this whole book. The majority of this book is really some great biographies on some special people. You know, Richard Henry Pratt. I never would have known anything about Richard Henry Pratt, but it just gives, you know, Anderson goes into some great descriptions on him. He also talks in parallel as these people were advancing in their football and athletic wisdom and maturity. People like Glenn Pop Warner goes through a great biography on him. At the same time, he's talking about, you know, Jim Thorpe and how he grows up through the ages. He's also talking about another key player in this game for Army, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and him growing up from a youthful lad in Kansas to becoming a great athlete at West Point. So that is what the bulk of the book is, but it's just such fascinating history, especially the way Lars Anderson jumps around from person to person as they're going through the years before 1912, leading up to this game. Great buildup. We're going to cover some more of this. And unfortunately, you know, Mark J is, I've started getting into this, Mark. I'm going to make a public apology to you. I thought, you know, this book, I would be able to do this in one podcast. Well, it is so great, and it's got so much information. This is going to be a multiple podcast. So just a warning to you listeners, I'm not going to be able to finish this game on this because the buildup is just so interesting and so great. And we're going to probably reference this biography that Lars Anderson has on some of these great football people in some later podcasts, and even on over on Sports Jersey Dispatch too. So on February 6, 1904, a scrawny 115-pound youth exited the train near Carlisle to enroll at the school. He was left his family behind at the reservation out west. It was a 15-year-old Jim Thorpe. He first stepped on the campus on what an impactful day it truly was for football. You know, not just for Carlisle football, but for football in general. Living at the school was no easy life for youths like Thorpe. I mean, Lars Anderson describes how Thorpe looked around, and he, you know, the trees lined up in the sidewalks and paths through the campus, but there was also a graveyard there. There was spreading of tuberculosis was a big killer of students at Carlisle, and their young bodies just couldn't handle the devastating disease, and they were sleeping in quarters where there was many people in a room and using shared restrooms and eating together in classroom together, and it wasn't the greatest thing for keeping away from germs, and it took a lot of lives, especially tuberculosis. And it was truly the case of the strongest only surviving. but in many cases, it was much better opportunity to succeed in life if they could survive the conditions of this school. So it roughened and toughened them up, you know, living outside in the plains and being outdoors and being very active in their native culture of, you know, Native Americans culture, hunting and fishing and, you know, all the activities that they do to stay in shape. And then going into this rugged environment, strange land, being together with people in a similar circumstance, but having to survive the rigors of, you know, disease and, you know, plus getting your hair cut and being away from your family. Had to be tragic. Now, Army's cadet team, they had a start in making themselves a born leader, as we mentioned earlier, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Eisenhower grew up in Kansas as a boy and loved playing games like cowboys and Indians, as well as athletic activities. He was a youth that was attracted to trouble, oftentimes fueled by his hot temper. One such event was talked about in Abilene, Kansas for decades. Eisenhower, from the poorer side of the town, had somehow found himself, after a full day of buildup at the Garfield Grammar School there in Abilene, there would be a public bare-knuckled street fight with him and a kid from the other side of the tracks, the richer, more affluent north side, Wesley Merrifield. Now, Merrifield was thought to have the upper hand in this battle. He was bigger, stronger, a little bit older. He was known to get in a scuffle or two, and he was going to defend his neighborhood for supremacy of the town. Now, Ike was much smaller, younger, less experienced of the two. It would surely be another notch in Merrifield's belt of victories. But it wasn't expected was the ferocity, the fortitude, the all-out determination of young Eisenhower. He charged into Meriwether, arms flailing, just, you know, catching the more experienced fighter off guard, and he showed the rest of the world what a competitor Dwight D. Eisenhower would be in a fight and on a football field. You know, he would take this later in life. Now, the competitors of this game were intense, they were good athletes, and we all know what they were doing. This should be a sure sign of what would occur in a 1912 contest. You know, the author takes Jim Thorpe into the school, and he leaves school for a while, goes back to the reservation, and his friend, a little bit older player at Carlisle, Albert Exedine, comes to him and talks him back into returning to Pop Warner and Carlisle football because he knows how good it would be for the school and for Jim Thorpe. Thorpe, you know, worked in the fields while he was back home and, you know, ate good and got stronger and bigger. He wasn't that scrawny 115-pound kid anymore. And he was working out, doing a lot of hard labor, returned back to the school, Carlisle, and finally, you know, Pop Warner got him on the football field. He saw what a great athlete he was and great in track, too. And ended up, Warner took Jim Thorpe and another Carlisle student to the Stockholm to the 1912 Olympics, and we know what Jim Thorpe did there. Won 5 gold medals, pentathlon, a bunch of other items there, where he was, you know, greatest athlete in the world at the time. Had a ticker tape parade when he returned. You know, in parallel, Dwight D. Eisenhower, he went to West Point just, you know, months after an Army player died on a football field in a Harvard game. And it just showed his determination and grit. And he played baseball with a guy named Omar Bradley, another West Point student, who ended up being General Omar Bradley, who served, you know, he was the main commander in the Battle of the Bulge, served under Dwight D. Eisenhower in the European theater of World War II. They became longtime friends, but, you know, just some great people that he was around too, with Dwight D. Eisenhower. And, you know, so you have the Olympic champion, you have the great baseball and football player with full of determination and grit in Dwight D. Eisenhower, and these you know, Pop Warner with coaching, and, you know, taking Carlisle and beating, you know, many of the great teams of the time, you know, beating Yale, beating Harvard, beating University of Chicago, Notre Dame. They played just some great teams, Pennsylvania, outstanding teams that Carlisle went up and faced against, and Army always had a powerhouse because they had some great recruitment techniques that they would have there, especially during the World Wars. World War One, you know, just going to be starting here real soon. So there was a build-up for West Point. We knew there was going to be trouble in the world and started building up those cadets. Well, like I said, I can't do this story justice, and we're going to come back with a part two of this in a couple days. So stay tuned, Pigskin Dispatch, for part two of the Carlisle versus Army 1912 game right here on pigskindispatch.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll be glad to hear you back. And remember, we have football history every single day of the year here on pigskindispatch.com. And on sportshistorynetwork.com, we're one of a couple dozen, more than a couple dozen, great podcasters on there bringing you sports history of all different shapes and sizes, sports from around the world, from different eras. So make sure you check that out. Sportshistorynetwork.com, your headquarters of sports yesteryear, and Pigskin Dispatch, your portal to positive football history. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.